Stay tuned for the Allegros Radio, the weekly radio program featuring the best in Greek music and culture, plus interviews with Greek and international newsmakers. The Allegros Radio with Michael Nevaralekis begins now.
Όταν τα πόδια σου προβάλλουν στα σκαλιά, χάνω τον έλεγχο και κάνω χίλια λάθη. Τα αφεντικό τη γράφει τη ζημιά. Μην ξαναρθείς απ' τη δουλειά, δεν το αντέχω, δεν το μπορώ να σ' αντικρίσω φιλικά. Εγώ ξεδίπλωσα τα φύλλα της καρδιάς μου και εσύ υπόγραψες σαν στάρ του σινεμά. Ξαφνούν μέσα μου φουντώνει. Όταν σε βλέπω να γελάς με σιγουριά, χάνω τον έλεγχο, το μάτι μου θολώνει. Κάτι με σπρώχνει να σου ρίξω μια μπουνιά. Μην ξαναρθεί απ' τη δουλειά, δεν το αντέχω, δεν το μπορώ να σ' αντικρίσω φιλικά. Εγώ ξεδίπλωσα τα φύλλα της καρδιάς μου και εσύ υπόγραψες σαν στάρ του σινεμά.
That was Nikos Yogalas starting off our broadcast today with San Star to Cinema. This is the Allegros Radio, the weekly Greek radio program which bridges the global Greek community and which airs worldwide on 17 radio stations across 5 continents on shortwave and online. My name is Michael Nevradakis, and today on our broadcast, we will feature as part of the Allegros interview series an interview with esteemed economist Roger Boodle, who is the founder and chairman of Capital Economics in London, an advisor to the British House of Commons Treasury Committee, a regular columnist in the Daily Telegraph, and the author of The Trouble with Europe. Mr. Boodle is also the winner of the prestigious Wolfson Prize in Economics for his study on how a member state of the Eurozone could manage a departure from the Eurozone in an orderly manner, and this is what Mr. Boodle will speak with us today as part of our interview. And following this interview, stay tuned for our Commentary of the Week segment, where we will discuss the latest developments coming out of Greece and Europe, and namely the recent agreement that was reached between the new Syriza-led Greek government and the Eurogroup, a decision which is being presented as a victory for Greece by the Greek government and media, but which is largely viewed as a total capitulation and defeat for Greece by most international observers and economists. This commentary will then be followed up by a special musical feature on Greek singer Manolis Mitsias. Coming up now, though, is this week's edition of the Diálogos interview series and our interview with economist Roger Boodle. The Diálogos interview series, our weekly segment featuring interviews on matters pertaining to Greece and the worldwide Greek community, coming up next here on Diálogos Radio. Joining us today on the Diálogos Radio and the Diálogos interview series is economist Roger Boodle. Roger is a specialist advisor to the British House of Commons Treasury Committee, the founder and chairman of Capital Economics. He is a regular columnist for the Daily Telegraph, a winner of the prestigious Wolfson Prize in Economics, and is the author of The Trouble with Europe. Roger, thank you for joining us on our program today.
Pleasure.
Before we delve into our discussion of the Eurozone and a possible exit from the common currency for a country like Greece, what do you make of the latest agreement that was reached between the new Greek government and the Eurogroup? Is this a victory for Greece, as the Greek government is proclaiming?
I think this is a game of smoke and mirrors. We still don't know the final assessment. It looks to me as though Greece has conceded an awful lot. And I have concerns about how the Greek government is going to present that to the Greek people, bearing in mind what was said during the election campaign. But it's not all over yet. There clearly is still a lot of manoeuvrings yet to be made.
This agreement includes an obligation for Greece to maintain a primary budget surplus, and of course all of the austerity measures that had been agreed upon by the previous government, at least for the next 4 months. In your view, can a national economy hope to have any chance of recovery under such conditions?
Well, I suppose it's possible to imagine an economy recovering with this sort of program in place. But first of all, let me draw a distinction between the austerity measures already in place and the objective of a primary surplus, which is already in place, on the one hand, and on the other hand, increasing the primary surplus to, as I understand it, 4.5% of GDP in 2016-17. That's a pretty big fiscal tightening to enact in a fairly short period of time. I think it's going to be extremely difficult for the Greek economy to withstand that. I mean, recent figures, of course, have already shown a drop back in GDP after an earlier recovery. I think the likelihood is, if these measures are pushed through, I think we'll see further declines in Greek GDP.
Let's take a closer look at the Eurozone and the way that it has been structured and that it has developed. What structural problems do you identify with the Eurozone, in your opinion?
Oh, quite simply, it exists. The fundamental problem began right at the very beginning. That's to say, it was a mistake, because it unifies two groups of countries which are fundamentally different and have fundamentally different, not just problems, but characteristics. So this isn't just about Greece versus the rest. In my book, it's essentially about the northern, or if you like, the Teutonic countries on the one hand and the southern countries on the other. Exchange rates perform a very useful role on a number of occasions, which is why, of course, they've existed for so long, which is why we don't have a common world currency. And what the countries of the Eurozone have done is abolished exchange rates between themselves. And this is problems facing Greece and other countries now are a direct result of that. The difficulties, if I may call them that, in countries like Greece, but also affecting Italy, Spain, and Portugal, are essentially to do with the combination of excessive levels of government debt and a lack of price competitiveness. Now, in the past, countries that have been in that sort of position have typically resorted to a weaker currency, which of course now they can't do. But this is only half of the problem. The other half of the problem is that in the northern countries, there you have a mindset, a set of behavioural responses, which is dominated by the urge to oversave and export without importing commensurately. That's to say, to run current account surpluses. I'm referring, of course, principally to Germany, but also to the Netherlands and to some other countries. If you have an exchange rate, it's like a hinge. These two can live side by side, as they did, of course, before the euro. Fix the exchange rate rigidly between these two groups of countries, and you end up with a disaster.
We are on the air with economist Roger Boodle here on the Alois Radio and the Alois Interview Series. And Mr. Boodle, rumors of a so-called Grexit, or a Greek exit from the Eurozone, have come and gone for the past 5+ years during the economic crisis in Greece. This is an option, however, that has been categorically rejected by each government that has been in power in Greece during this period, including the current Syriza-led government, which was just elected last month. Do you believe that a Grexit would be the best solution for Greece?
Yes. In fact, I think it's probably the only solution for Greece. It doesn't surprise me that Greek governments have rejected it. It's quite common, this. Indeed, in the world of psychology and psychotherapy, I think it's known as Stockholm syndrome. That's to say, a situation where a captor becomes so emotionally involved with his captor that when the cage is opened, he doesn't want to leave. Essentially, what you have here is a political class that's invested an enormous amount of political capital in membership of the euro, and of course there are dangers and risks in being outside the euro. I don't want to downplay those. It's not simple. Quite often you find this in economic history. The governing class clings on to the very regime, just in the Stockholm syndrome, clings on to the very regime which is imprisoning them. Now, there are two British examples I can give you. Now, admittedly, Britain isn't Greece, but there are strong similarities. In 1931, Britain was on the gold standard, along with most of the world. And the then British government did everything it possibly could, public spending cuts, wage cuts, everything to try to keep Britain on the gold standard. And indeed, enacting these cuts effectively split the Labour Party in two, between those who were supporting this policy and those that were opposing it. The government bent every effort to stay on the gold standard. Then finally, the pressure became irresistible and Britain, well, I can't say left, was forced off the gold standard. Disaster. Except what then happened was the fastest rate of growth in Britain's whole industrial history as a direct result of that so-called disaster of 1931. The government had resisted it. Second example, 1992. And at the time, not many British people, let alone economists, knew about the 1931 experience, although I did. And when it came to the crisis of 1992, I thought this would be a repeat of 1931. Now, in 1992, Britain was in the forerunner of the euro, that's to say the European Exchange Rate Mechanism, the ERM. We were in for 2 years. We had chronically high unemployment. We had a depressed housing market. The economy was on its knees. And yet here was Britain clinging on to this ridiculously high and demanding exchange rate and imposing very high interest rates. The government fought tooth and nail to keep the pound in the ERM. And they told everybody it would be a disaster if we were forced off. Interest rates would go up, inflation would go up, the whole thing would be a complete disaster. And on September the 16th, 1992, what happened is that we were forced off the ERM, forced out of it. What then ensued, well, funnily enough, just about the second fastest period of industrial growth, we had a strong recovery. Things did extremely well. And that day now has gone down in the common recollection of recent British history as Golden Wednesday, September the 16th, 1992, opposed by just about everybody at the time, the Bank of England, the Treasury, the whole commentariat, the whole establishment, they all wanted to stay in the very thing that was strangling us.
There are many who insist that a departure from the Eurozone is not even possible under existing European Union treaties and frameworks, or that a Eurozone exit also means a departure from the European Union as well. What do these treaties actually foresee, and what does international law have to say regarding a sovereign right to withdraw from treaty obligations?
I'm not an international lawyer, but my reading of the agreements and treaties is that it's perfectly possible to withdraw from the Eurozone without being forced to withdraw from the EU. And indeed, I think it's arguable that it would be illegal for the other members of the EU to try to force Greece out of the EU simply because it had withdrawn from the Eurozone. Don't forget, there are plenty of countries belonging to the EU that don't belong to the Eurozone. Britain, of course, being one of them, Denmark and Sweden being others. So you perfectly can be in the EU and not be a member of the Eurozone. The other thing to say is that I don't think the history of European law is a particularly distinguished one. When it comes to political and economic reality, the lords and masters in Brussels, Frankfurt and Berlin really do what suits them and then work out the law afterwards. The notion that the law can or should decide this issue, I think, is pure and utter nonsense. When it comes down to it, this is about political and economic reality.
We are on the air with economist Roger Boodle here on the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. And Mr. Boodle, there's lots of fear in Greece over what a Eurozone exit would mean for the country. Let's tackle some of these fears. Would there truly be a risk, for instance, of hyperinflation or of a catastrophic devaluation of the new domestic currency that would replace the euro?
I think it's likely that inflation would go significantly higher for a time. And indeed, that's part of the way through which Greece finds some sort of salvation. I think there are a couple of key points to make here. First of all, coming out of the euro and letting the currency devalue is not a magic wand which is bound to succeed in all cases. You can make a mess of this. And so plenty of countries have made a mess of it. They've let inflation run riot. They've failed to restrain government spending, and the result has been that the devaluation has done no good at all. So that's on the negative side. In other words, this is a process that has to be managed, that demands strong government with a vision of the end result. But on the positive side, something I think has really not come across at all in this whole debate. If you listen to people, you get the impression that somehow coming out of the euro, having your own currency and letting that currency fall on the exchanges, this is almost like some appallingly nasty medicine which might even kill you. It's going to cause such economic chaos and loss. This is, frankly, economically illiterate. The key point is, as people in Greece know only too well, Greece has suffered a loss of GDP over the last few years of just about 25%. That's to say, around about a quarter of its output. And there is enormous spare capacity in the Greek economy. We can debate exactly how much it is, whether all of that quarter could be regained or not, but it's very, very large. Now, when an exchange rate falls, the effect of this, and it's the intention of those countries that choose to devalue, the effect of this is to deter domestic consumers from buying goods imported and services imported from abroad, and to encourage foreigners to buy goods and services produced by this country, in this case, Greece. In a number of cases, historically, it's been very difficult to enact that process without enormous inflation, because frankly, there haven't been the spare resources in the economy to be diverted into increased net exports. But that's not the Greek situation. There's hardly any example since the 1930s, any example in the world of a country having suffered a drop of its GDP of about a quarter, about 25%. So I'm in no doubt myself about this. As long as the government doesn't blow it, far from causing increased misery or depression, a devaluation, an exit from the euro, can bring the economic equivalent of salvation. It can be the mechanism which leads to an increase in GDP. And this is the point which, time and time again, it seems to me, the bankers and politicians in Frankfurt, Berlin and other places don't seem to get. They think debt sustainability is all about austerity and interest payments and so on and so forth. Frankly, it isn't. That's the small change of these affairs. The key thing about sustainability is quite simply income. If Greece could recover its previous level of income, then the primary surplus would soar way beyond the numbers that are trying to be imposed on Syriza. And similarly, the debt to GDP ratios would plunge. The key to all this is getting economic growth in Greece. If you get that at a decent level, this problem will be solved.
There is also a logistical issue that is often raised about how Greece would be able to plan a transition to a new economy and whether the planning as well as the printing and the minting of the new currency should take place in secrecy or if it should take place with public knowledge and whether it would even be possible to keep something like this secret for very long. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think in an ideal world, you would keep things secret. That would minimize panic and disruption and would minimize the need to impose capital controls and to close the banks. However, I think this crisis has gone so far, it's so far advanced now, the chances of keeping it secret are pretty slim, except for perhaps a day or two at most. So if Greece is to come out of the euro, what I think will happen is that at some point or other, probably a weekend, but not necessarily a weekend, an announcement will be made to the effect that the banks are now closed, there are capital controls, and whatever was previously held in a whole series of financial instruments, including bank deposits, as so many euros, was now held as so many drachma. Now, or whatever you want to call your new currency. With regard to the printing and minting issue, I think this has received rather too much attention, more attention than it deserves. It is an issue, but it's not, in my mind these days, a very big issue. And the reason is that a huge proportion, the overwhelming majority of transactions by value in a modern economy are in some sense done electronically. Credit card, debit card, bank transfer, whole series of ways of making payments. Cash payments are a relatively small part of an economy. And all those other things can take place without the use of notes and coin. And indeed, in an economy where there aren't many notes and coin, that's what you'd find. You'd find more and more transactions being done in some sense electronically. Now, for those transactions which had to take place by notes and coin, if Greece were to come out of the euro, I suggest and I suspect that what would happen is that euros would continue to be used for those transactions. And you might for a time indeed have a dual pricing system operating in Greece where traders would say, would give a certain price for payment in cash with euros and another price for payment with a debit or credit card in drachmas. Now that's by no means ideal, but then we don't live in an ideal world. You can't print and mint overnight. We've done the study to suggest it's going to take months to have a full supply of notes available. I don't know, it might be 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 months. I don't think that's a problem that's at all insurmountable. You'd simply make do for a time without drachma notes and coin.
We are on the air with economist Roger Boodle here on the Allegos Radio and the Allegos interview series. And Mr. Boodle, there are also many persistent fears of a possible bank run upon the announcement of a Eurozone exit. And there's also fears, of course, that as a result of this bank run, that banks in Greece would become insolvent. Is bank nationalization an option that you believe should be considered in this case? And what other policy options exist as well?
I think bank nationalization is a possibility, but I don't think it's necessary. What you might have to do, I say, is close the banks and put capital controls on. But I think for a fairly short time, the key thing, which again I think is not widely appreciated, is the benefits of monetary sovereignty. If you have your own currency, you, the central bank, can issue it. Now, Greece doesn't have its own currency and can't issue it. It's using the euro. Once you make the transition to the drachma, or new drachma, then the central bank of Greece can print this stuff ad nauseam. So banks get into trouble, the Central Bank of Greece, National Bank of Greece, can supply credit lines to those banks. That's exactly what happened, of course, in other monetarily sovereign countries like the UK, when we had the international financial crisis of 2008-09. The central banks of Britain and America and Japan have been engaging in quantitative easing, that's to say, buying financial instruments, principally government bonds, with effectively newly created money, admittedly not printed usually, but electronically created. It's the same thing. This can be done quite easily. So I think that fear is grossly exaggerated. Now, if banks got into certain difficulties, and some of them might do, because they had a mismatch of assets and liabilities in euros and drachma, then it might be necessary for the Greek government, if it didn't nationalize those, actually to recapitalize them. But that's perfectly possible. To come back to this point about growth and GDP, the ultimate guarantor of the quality of assets, whether they're owned by banks or other people, is the state of the economy. There's a great tendency to isolate financial things as though they operate in another world. They don't. You can't get blood out of a stone. If an economy is not there producing decent levels of GDP, you can have bank claims on it till the cows come home, but they will not be honoured. The way to improve the credit quality of Greek assets and the strength of Greek banks is to have strong economic growth in Greece. And I think under current policies, that's impossible. And I think with Greece out of the euro with a much lower exchange rate, I don't really think it's possible. I think it's highly likely.
What kinds of policies could be enforced to bring about this strong economic growth, and what would the impact of a return to a domestic currency be on businesses, small and large, and on wages and pensions in Greece?
The first impact of a new currency and a devaluation will be to raise the price of imported goods and services. So a lot of people would suffer a decline, immediate decline, in their real incomes as prices in the shops went up. Now, actually, I think there would be scope, quite considerable scope, for the Greek government to offset some of that effect by lower taxes or increasing benefits for vulnerable people. And the reason there would be the scope is not just because it would no longer be subject to the austerity regime imposed by the Troika, but also because of the benefits of real economic growth. One of the consequences of growth in the economy is that money flows into the exchequer. So in the Greek case, here you are focusing on, or the Troika is trying to get you to focus on, getting up the primary surplus to 4.5% of GDP. If the Greek economy were to grow over the next several years very strongly, you would go way past 4.5% GDP, not through austerity measures, but simply as a result of more taxes coming into the exchequer. So I think there's scope to offset, actually, some of the initial squeeze on real incomes, but it would be important that the government didn't go all the way. Now, in terms of the effects on Greek industry and business, Greek industry and service providers would immediately become much more competitive. Let's say the exchange rate falls by 25%, which I think is perfectly plausible. That means to a foreigner buying Greek output, it's immediately now 25% cheaper. So I think you will find a surge in tourism, tourists coming to Greece. They will be diverted from other destinations, from Turkey, from Italy, Spain, Portugal, other places, towards Greece. Also, within the Greek economy, you will find Greek consumers trying to find Greek alternatives to goods that they were importing from abroad. So lots of businesses would, I think, before very long, experience much stronger business conditions. And that will, of course, in time, it would lead to increased employment. It would also, I think, lead to higher wages in those sectors. Now, again, it's important that wages don't go shooting up, otherwise you'll offset the benefit of the devaluation. But there would be scope for increased wages in those industries which are growing as a direct result of the improvement in competitiveness.
We are on the air with economist Roger Boodle here on the Galagos Radio and the Galagos interview series. And Mr. Boodle, there is, of course, the matter of Greece's debt to contend with as well. How would the debt issue be tackled upon a return to a national currency? And as a second part to this question, do you believe that an audit should be conducted of the Greek debt?
I think an audit of the Greek debt would be a good idea, but if it's an audit just in the way that, as it were, an accountancy firm does an audit, it would be limited, its benefits would be limited to the benefits you get from that sort of exercise. It's to say you won't get to the fundamental economics of all this. And it's the fundamental economics of it that I think are extremely important. Now, first of all, let me say that the Troika isn't entirely mad or even wrong. There are certain things that have happened in the Greek system over recent years which have been less than wonderful. The collection of tax has not been good. Certain parts of society have been able to escape without paying a full amount of tax. There's been a considerable waste in the management of government spending and public employment. All those things are true. And the sensible thing for a Greek government after an exit from the euro, the sensible thing would be to continue with good husbandry of the public finances. Having said that, we then come to the question of default or not and what would happen to Greek debt. I think there would be a case, and it might even be necessary after an exit from the euro, for Greece to default on some of its public debts. Greece, of course, has done this before. Many other countries have done it before. It's not the end of the world. Obviously, it's not what you want to do in the best of all possible worlds, but Greece is not in the best of all possible worlds. The most important point is the point I'm trying to make about the state of the economy. If the economy returns to health with rapid rates of economic growth, the debt problem is going to be transformed. Now, my own country, Britain, I know it's different from Greece, but we've had twice, actually, in our history, a debt ratio which makes the current Greek ratio seem small by comparison. Twice, we've had a debt ratio of 250% of GDP, both time after wars. First of all, after the Napoleonic Wars, 1815, and secondly, after the Second World War in 1945. And in both occasions, we worked that debt ratio down as a share of GDP to very low levels and without default. How? Well, the government kept tight control of its finances, but the key thing is economic growth. Continued economic growth brings the debt ratios down. So if Greece was able to secure decent rates of economic growth, even though the debt level is very high, I wouldn't think it was unsustainable.
Now, in wrapping up, what would the impact of a departure of Greece or any other country of the Eurozone be on the Eurozone itself? You've suggested that this might actually be beneficial for the stronger economies and that it might create an optimal currency area amongst these countries.
Yes, what happened to the rest of the Eurozone, I think, would depend very much on how Greece managed. And I tried to indicate this is not certain. You can't, as it were, hope to leave the euro, have your own currency, go on a spending spree willy-nilly and pay yourself 40% more and expect the whole thing's going to work. It, in those circumstances, would fail. But the hypothesis I've put forward is that I think a new currency and a devaluation could work for Greece. Work in the sense that it would bring decent economic growth and that would then start to improve the position of the government's finances. Now, if that happened, this would have enormous implications for the other countries in southern Europe. The voters in Italy and Spain and Portugal would look at this experience and say, look at that. We can do it. There's another way. Growth is the key. We're not getting growth under these austerity programs. And I think there's a very good chance that Greece would lead the way to a euro exit by those other countries. Now, if that were to happen, if you had Greece, Italy, Spain, and Portugal out of the euro with an exchange rate between those countries and the countries of the Northern Core. Obviously, the countries of the Northern Core, their exchange rate would go up, their exports would become less competitive, prices would fall in the shops in those countries, consumers would become better off, and consumer spending would rise. This would be a benefit the system, not only to the countries of the South, but also to the countries of the Northern Core. It astonishes me the way this aspect of the issue is not generally perceived in Europe. In Germany in particular, they say, oh, it would be a disaster if the euro was split in this way and the new currency, the new Northern currency, whatever it was, went up on the exchanges. How would we cope? My reply to that is very simple. This would be, effectively, a return to the sort of system that you had under the Deutschmark. And that was a disaster, wasn't it? Remind me, I've forgotten my German economic history, but I think under the Deutschmark you did very badly, didn't you? I mean, you know, your exports were clobbered by a rising exchange rate. German consumers did very badly. Wasn't Germany at the bottom of the growth leagues in that period under the Deutschmark? That's why you were so keen to give me up, wasn't it? This is the point they failed to realise. Actually, having a stronger currency for them and a weaker currency for the Southern Europeans is not only a benefit to the Southern Europeans, it's also a benefit to them because of the nature of the country and the people that they are. They have a natural tendency, export very hard, save very hard. I'm not saying that's wrong. What I am saying is it doesn't work very well, that set of behaviours, if you're then chained together with a group of countries that whose habits and institutions and histories are altogether different. So in the world I'm describing, in which Greece leads to an exit of the euro by the southern European countries, and the northern ones led by Germany experience a higher exchange rate, what that leads to is stronger consumption growth and higher living standards in Northern Europe. I mean, I think one has to look at this on a world level. Around the world, yes, there have been certain economic problems. We've all had suffered from the financial crash of 2008-09. But look, America is recovering. Britain's recovering. China's still growing, albeit more slowly than it was a few years ago. Now oil prices are substantially lower. What's the part of the world where economic performance is worst? Quite simple. Europe. Now, I wonder what reason we can possibly come up with for that. Do you know, I find it very difficult. What is there about Europe that makes it stand out? How? What could possibly explain the fact that Europe has done so badly? Well, we should ask that to Chancellor Merkel and the others. Personally, I've got an answer. It's quite simple. The euro. The euro is the reason, the single, simple reason why Europe has done so badly over the last decade.
Well, Mr. Brudel, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today here on the Allegos Radio, and thank you very much for your very detailed analysis of this issue.
Thank you very much.
Attention iTunes users, the Allegos Radio is now just a click away. You can now download our podcasts and listen to the Allegos Radio 24/7 anytime, anywhere. Check us out today in the iTunes podcast directory and in iTunes Radio.
We just wrapped up this week's edition of the Allegos interview series here on the Allegos Radio, where we spoke with British economist Roger Brudel. As with all of our interviews, the podcast of this interview will soon be available on our website, theallegosmedia.org, where you can also find our on-demand programming, our articles and written work, our past playlists, and listen to our online radio station, the Allegos Radio 24/7. Our podcasts are also available in the official Allegos Radio apps for Android, Kindle, and BlackBerry devices, and for Google Chrome, and in iTunes, TuneIn.com, the Windows Marketplace, and the Nobex Radio, WeCast, and Player FM apps for various smartphones. Coming up next here on the Allegos Radio is our commentary of the week.
The Allegos Radio's commentary of the week. Each week, Michael Navratakis provides views and opinions on issues pertaining to Greece and to the worldwide Greek community. Coming up next, here on the Allegos Radio.
For today's commentary, I wanted to begin by going back in time to 2012, when Syriza had just become the main opposition party in Greece, and when Syriza's leader Alexis Tsipras wrote in a famous tweet that the only way for Greece to surpass its economic crisis would be for a single law with a single article to be drafted, which would immediately abolish all of the memorandum and austerity agreements. Moving forward, at several points throughout the past 2 years, numerous Syriza representatives have said that the loan agreements that Greece has signed with the Troika are one and the same as the memorandum agreements and must be immediately abolished for Greece to have any hope of economic and social recovery. Moving forward some more, during the recent election campaign in January, Syriza repeatedly promised that the memorandum and austerity agreements would be torn up during the very first week of a new Syriza government. Let's flash forward to the present now, where after Syriza's electoral victory, the new government just completed a harsh set of supposed negotiations with the Eurogroup, which is the committee of the Eurozone's finance ministers. And in an immediate backtrack from everything that Syriza had promised its voters, new finance minister Yanis Varoufakis eliminated any possibility of renegotiating Greece's national debt or of creating an independent tribunal to audit Greece's debt. He also eliminated any possibility of a so-called Grexit or Greek exit from the Eurozone, and instead, he initially proposed to the Troika, which consists of the European Union, the European Central Bank, and the International Monetary Fund, that Greece would continue 70% of its existing austerity commitments and replace the remaining 30% with equivalent measures. Essentially, Varoufakis proposed a continuation of most austerity measures and a majority of the previous memorandum agreements. And when the list did not fly, Varoufakis caved some more, proposing to keep the current memorandum agreements in place for 6 more months, during which there would be continued supervision of Greece by the Troika, with a promise not to change any already existing austerity measures, with no implementation of the restoration of the minimum wage, and with an agreement to honor Greece's debt commitments, including those to the European Central Bank and to the IMF, in full. Varoufakis also proposed that Greece would maintain a primary budget surplus of 1.5% of GDP at a time where Greece has once again fallen into deficit, thus requiring more cutbacks in spending in the midst of an economic crisis. And as all of these festivities were taking place, the new so-called left-wing progressive government nominated and then elected as president of the Hellenic Republic a right-wing former minister from the conservative New Democracy Party who was notorious for protecting police officers who murdered an unarmed teenager in 2008, leading to major riots, and who is famous for his patronage hires as well. Ultimately, Varoufakis' second proposal became the basis for the final agreement with Eurogroup, an agreement which, however, provides an extension of the existing memorandum agreements, the so-called Master Financial Assistance Agreement, and an extension of the so-called bailout funds for 4 months instead of 6. Why 4 months? Because at the end of this 4-month period, Greek bond issues totaling 6.7 billion euros will mature, putting Greece once again in a very difficult position and setting the stage for these political theatrics to once again be repeated. What else does this agreement include? It includes a bit of wordplay and semantics, as the Troika is now renamed the institutions, even though once again the very same actors, the EU, the ECB, and the IMF, are involved. It involves a pledge by the Greek government to continue the privatization programs already completed or in progress, and to simply re-evaluate the new proposed privatizations which have not yet made it to the bidding process. The agreement also entails possible increases in the value-added tax, a pledge that increases to the minimum wage will have to be agreed to by the so-called institutions formerly known as the Troika, a so-called re-evaluation of spending on education, defense, transport, local governance, and social welfare, the continuation of environmentally hazardous mining activities at Skouries in northern Greece, which are also economically dubious, and a Greek pledge that no new measures that will add spending, such as rehiring fired public sector employees, will be enforced. The agreements further include a Greek government promise that it will not undertake any unilateral actions, that is, any actions without the agreement of the Troika or institutions, and the maintenance of a yet-to-be-determined primary budget surplus, while we are now hearing that the new loan agreement will be railroaded through Parliament as a so-called so-called urgent measure with limited parliamentary debate. For many, this was viewed as heroic and as a big victory for Greece. We've kept hearing, especially in Greece, that the Greek government, for the first time in recent history, stood up to Europe, that it did not accept Europe's blackmail and bullying, that a breath of fresh air for Greece has blown. One supposedly anti-austerity newspaper claimed that the Greek victory was so great that Greece even came away with German Finance Minister Schäuble's underpants. That's the propaganda that's being heard in Greece right now. For most international economists and observers, however, this agreement was not viewed as anything close to a victory for Greece. It was instead viewed as a total or almost total capitulation and defeat, and as an almost complete flip-flop of Syriza's campaign promises to end austerity and to do away with the Troika. It is extremely telling that Greece's pro-memorandum and pro-austerity parties, such as New Democracy, PASOK, and Topotami, hailed the new agreement, calling it a positive development and a major step forward for the country. Syriza did not respond to these statements, but when Greek national hero and member of the European Parliament Manolis Glezos dared to question these agreements, apologizing on behalf of Syriza to the Greek people for the party's complete reversal of its pre-election promises, he was attacked and harshly criticized by members of his own party. Such is democracy and tolerance in Greece's new and oh-so-leftist and progressive government. Equally telling are the comments made by Finance Minister Varoufakis after the agreement with the Eurogroup, stating that he will seek out close collaboration with the IMF, which holds views that he personally agrees with, rather than with Greece's creditors. This is the same IMF which has not only helped destroy the Greek economy over the past 5 years, but which has destroyed the economies of dozens of other countries in Eastern Europe, Latin America, Africa, and Asia through its enforcement of austerity policies, privatizations, and a wholesale destruction of the social state. Syriza apologists keep telling us that the government is new, that it had no time to prepare for these negotiations, that we should give it more time to prepare for the next round of negotiations in 4 months or less. This is completely absurd. Syriza has had since 2012 to prepare for the moment that it would come to power, and all throughout that time, Syriza made promises which are the exact opposite to what it has agreed to with the Eurogroup. Here on the Athagos Radio, we have been warning about this for months now, that Syriza would flip-flop and go back on its word, that it had already begun to water down its supposedly radical positions and rhetoric, and in return, we have been accused of being unpatriotic, of not giving the government enough time, of being fascists or in favor of the previous government, and of hoping that Greece will fail. Such is the infantile level of political discourse in Greece and amongst segments of the global left. And in the meantime, we also keep hearing that Syriza is governing with a broad mandate, and that the Greek people have expressed a clear preference for remaining in a eurozone. What mandate are we talking about, however? Syriza won with merely 36% of the vote, while 34% of registered voters, over 1 million more people than those who voted for Syriza, simply did not vote. We hear that Syriza is enjoying support of 70 to 80% in opinion surveys, and that 75% of the Greek people are in favor of remaining in a eurozone. What we don't hear, however, is that these numbers come from the same polling firms who are closely tied to the Greek state and Greek establishment and to the major media outlets in Greece, and which have suddenly become very fanatically pro-Syriza, and whose poll results in the past have proven to be extremely off the mark, such as their predictions leading up to last month's elections that Syriza was only 2 or 3 points ahead of New Democracy, or that a near majority of the Greek population still believed the New Democracy leader Antonis Samaras was still the best suited individual to be Prime Minister of Greece. These are polls which are conducted on behalf of the major newspapers and media outlets of Greece, or in certain cases, on behalf of newspapers such as Avgi, which is a party organ of Syriza. They are not independently conducted, and they have zero credibility whatsoever. And it is amazing that the same Syriza supporters who criticized these polls up until the elections are now constantly referring to these same polls now that their party is in power. This is the Syriza government which some in the global left were saying was an absolute duty to support prior to the elections. This is the government many supported in so-called solidarity rallies around Greece and across the world in recent weeks. This is the government of hope and change, reminiscent of Obama's hope and change and Yes We Can in 2008, the government which is supposed to give hope to Europe and the world. And this is the government which supposedly turned the page for Greece by standing up to Germany. Except that German Finance Minister Wolfgang Schäuble stated, after the Eurogroup agreement was reached, that the Greek government will have a very difficult time presenting this agreement to its electorate. And 4 months from now, the same tragedy will play out all over again with this government that is leftist and progressive in name only.
Take the Dialogos Radio on the go with you with the new Dialogos Radio app for Android devices. Now you can listen live to the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos Radio 24/7, download our podcasts, and read our latest articles all in our free Android app, available now in the Google Play Store.
We just wrapped up our commentary of the week here on the Dialogos Radio, and coming up now is our special musical tribute to one of the foremost names in Greek music of the past half century, Manolis Mitsias. Mitsias was born on February 26, 1946, in the town of Doumbia in the Chalkidiki region of northern Greece, and beginning in his childhood years, he was involved with singing, serving as a choir boy at his local church and orating Byzantine hymns. His vocal abilities led him to sing traditional songs of northern Greece as well, before branching out to Greek popular music of the 1950s and 1960s. Later on, as a university student in the city of Thessaloniki, he continued singing with the Institute of Art and Culture of Northern Greece, and he also founded a musical establishment in the city where he began to sing for patrons, soon becoming a popular musical name in Thessaloniki. At the same time, his resistance actions against the military junta, which ruled Greece at the time, led to Mitsias briefly being jailed alongside other students who opposed the country's military regime. Mitsias and his talents were eventually discovered by a representative of Lyra, one of Greece's largest record labels at the time, who encouraged Mitsias to relocate to Athens to advance his musical career. Once in Athens, Mitsias had the opportunity to meet the famous composer Limos Moutsis, who helped Mitsias release his first album, titled Stin Elefsina Mia Fora, in 1969. From that point forward, Mitsias's career took off, and in the 5 decades which have followed, Mitsias has performed all over the world, including at venues such as Lincoln Center and Carnegie Hall in New York City, and in collaboration with some of the most famous names in Greek music, including Mikis Theodorakis, Vasilis Titsanis, Stavros Xarchakos, Dimos Moutsis, Thanos Mikroutsikos, Marios Stokas, Stamatis Karaonakis, Akis Panou, Stamatis Panoudakis, Yannis Panos, Christos Nikolopoulos, and many others. We will hear some music by Mitsias now as we continue our musical tribute here on the Dialogos Radio.
Βραδιά και τους γνωστούς ρωτούσα για το κορίτσι μου που αγαπούσα στην Ελευσίνα μια φορά. Λιθαρί για το κορίτσι μου που ήταν καμάρι στην Ελευσίνα μια φορά. Για το κορίτσι μου που ήταν καμάρι στην Ελευσίνα μια φορά.
Follow the Alagos Radio on Facebook and Twitter and remain connected to all our latest news and updates. Check us out today at facebook.com/thealagosmedia and at twitter.com/thealagosmedia. Some music by Manolis Mitsias as part of our special musical feature here on the Alagos Radio, where we just heard Stina Lefsina Mia Fora. This is the Alagos Radio, the weekly Greek radio program which bridges the worldwide Greek community each week with broadcasts on 17 radio stations across 5 continents on shortwave and online. Today's broadcast is just about ready to come to a close, but we will be back again next week, same time, same place, with an interview with John Hillary, the executive director of War on Want, an organization based in London which fights against poverty and which is heavily involved in a campaign against the proposed Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, or TTIP. John Hillary will speak to us in detail about this proposed agreement and what its potential consequences are for Europe and for countries like Greece, and also for the United States as well. This interview is coming up next week here on the Alagos Radio and the Alagos Interview Series. We will wrap up today's program with one final song, once again by Manolis Mitsias, titled Tragoudi του Παλιού Καιρού. Thank you for joining us once again this week here on the Alagos Radio, and have a wonderful weekend.
Αλλάζουν οι καιροί, περνάν τα κόσμου το ποτάμι είναι θολό. Μα εγώ θα βγω στον ήρου τα μπαλκόνια για να σε δω σκυμμένο στο πύλο. Καράβια να κεντάς και χελιδόνια. Λίγη και το νερό στα σύννεφα ακριβό. Το κυπάρισι γη μια το τυλίγη. Το κότο και τη στάχτη του βουβού. Κι ατέλειωτο του ήλιου το κυνήγι.
Κι ήρθες εσύ και σκάλισες μια κρίνη για τον παλιό του πόντου ναυαγό που χάθηκε. Μα η μνήμη του έχει μείνει κοχύλι λαμπερό στην Αμοργό και βότσαλο αλμυρό στη Σαντορίνη. Και από τη δροσιά που σάλεψε στη φτέρη πήρα κι εγώ το δάκρυ μιας ροδιάς για να μπορώ σε τούτο το Δευτέρι καημούς να συλλαβίζω της καρδιάς με του παραμυθιού το πρώτο αστέρι. Μα τώρα που η μεγάλη φτάνει τρίτη και ανάσταση θα αργήσει να φανεί, θέλω να πας στη Μάνη και στην Κρήτη με συντροφιά σου εκεί παντοτινή, το Λύκο, τον Αϊτό και τον Αστρίτη. Κι άμα θα δεις κρυφά στο μέτωπό σου να λάμπει μια απαλή μαρμαριγή τα λωτινό πεφτάστερο, σηκώσου να ζωντανέψεις πάλι μια πηγή που καρτερείς το βράχο το δικό σου.
αλλάζουν οι καιροί, περνάν τα χρόνια. Του κόσμου το ποτάμι είναι θολό. Μα εγώ θα βγω στον ήρωτα μπαλκόνια για να σε δω σκυμμένο στο πύλο. Καράβια να κεντάς και χελιδώς.